This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition. Welcome to Golo's House. Welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand and live from Buffalo, New York. South Buffalo, to be specific.
Yes.
Deep in the fuchsia-colored territory of Byron Brown. Lots of write-down Byron Brown signs on my way into the neighborhood today. We are going to talk about the world of professional wrestling business. I am here at Golo's house, as you can see. I think I'm sitting in one of his kitchen chairs or something like that right now.
Dining room chairs.
Yeah. If you're watching live right now on YouTube, we have the weather map in front of us. The Golo report with all the TV ratings is behind us. I will be able to point to it. Golo will be able to point to it. But I'm here in person today for my date with Destiny versus your microphone.
Yeah. You have a vendetta against it.
The battle with your microphone, there was some progress made with your AT2020. I have not yet defeated it yet, though. We're still having issues making you hear me on your microphone, yeah. but we've made progress. We had you didn't realize that your AT2020 was also a monitoring device. Yeah. Now you know that. But it's not as loud as it once was, at least at last test.
Yes.
Is that a Lily? Is that like a Lily doll right there?
No.
You don't have like a fiend Lily doll? What is that?
No. It's a grumpy cat.
It's a grumpy cat. Okay. Yes. It looks kind of like a lily doll from far.
No, I have no lily dolls here.
I'm surrounded by Spider-Man things, and there's wrestling things in here too, right?
Yes, yeah. So this is like a room in progress. I'm actually going to tear down all these walls and turn this into like more of like a studio, like lounge type deal.
Really?
Yeah, this is going to get renovated within the next year or so. Like, this is all going to get torn down.
Okay. You could probably get closer to the mic. Listeners who are watching the chat, you could like pull the stand. You could like you could do that, or you could like unscrew the stick, and pull it a few inches, or maybe several inches closer to you.
A little like that. There we go. Does that work?
You're gonna have to speak directly into it, though.
Okay. All right. I'm used to speaking away from the mic,
but now you're my off, mic. But now you're off screen. See, these are the issues that I battle with on a weekly basis for WrestleNomics, right? Just make sure your face is on camera. Your face is half off camera right now.
All right. So let's do this. There we go. How's it going?
That sounds good. Apparently, I'm coming through the left channel, and Golo is coming through the right channel. I wonder if I press this button here, if that corrects it. It might not, though. So, if there's a way to correct that, I don't know what it is, but we'll do our best. Hopefully this is audible enough. Thanks for your comments in the chat letting us know how this is sounding and looking, because I wrestle with and stress out about how everything is sounding and looking all the time. But anyway, we've got wrestling business to talk about.
We do.
Where do you want to start, Golo?
Well,
this is a WrestleNomics logo. This is the report.
Yeah, let's actually start with the report here, the Golo report. And kind of all the talk of last week's episode was the 30-minute war, and we have some preliminary results of that 30-minute war. And we'll start with SmackDown. So this is the preliminary Fast Nationals for SmackDown, 833,000 P2 plus with a 0.22 in 18 of 49. We don't really have to give last week's comparison on Fox because this is different being on FS1.
So what you're reading here is my best guess calculation. There should be an asterisk next to this. Yeah. So this is what Andrew Zarian reported yesterday on Twitter for the Fast Nationals.
Yeah, so he reported 793 for SmackDown, and then he reported 549 on Rampage, and we'll go with your best estimate.
So we should, why don't I just explain what my math was here? So I'm figuring that based on the last couple weeks where we've had Fast Nationals, and just to review, for anybody who's just catching up, what a fast national is. Do you know what a fast national is at this point, Chris Cole? Could you explain to the listeners?
So a fast national is like a, seems like an estimated rating that you can pay for, but you have to, it's very expensive through Nielsen. And from my understanding, wasn't it just broadcasting? Or was it just like networks like Fox, ABC, CBS?
It could be for any channel. Okay. But we already get what people call overnights, what are also called fast affiliates.
So overnights is what I'm thinking of.
Every single day. I'm not sure if overnights is like a is a technical term, yeah. But it's something that people use to refer to both fast nationals and fast affiliates. Fast affiliates are very normal. We get fast affiliates every day. There's fast affiliates. Today is Sunday. So fast affiliates had probably already been reported for Saturday, for whatever was on network TV / broadcast TV Saturday night. We get fast affiliates every day, and we get fast affiliates for SmackDown the next day when it's on Fox, because Fox is a broadcast network. So that's not out of the norm. What is out of the norm are fast nationals. Fast nationals could be for cable or broadcast. Again, where fast affiliates are only for broadcast. So fast nationals, as you said, have to be paid for. They're something that Nielsen subscribers have to specially request. And it's expensive. A couple thousand dollars, yeah. I think, for every program that you want a fast national for. And we've been dealing with fast nationals really for the first time in my life of covering wrestling business. This is the first time I've ever dealt with actual fast national data. So this is a big deal.
This is what the 30-minute war has come to.
Yeah. So what we have on the screen right now are the fast nationals up here. This is from Andrew Zarian, the total viewership. Now, we'll get to this in a moment. Let's just talk about how I got to this math. But now let's get to it now. What's been reported in the last couple weeks have been the total viewership and the demo. Sean Ross Sapp reported this information first a couple weeks ago for Rampage only. Then the next week, Raj Geary from Wrestling Inc. reported this information, total viewership and demo for Rampage and SmackDown. Sean Ross Sapp apparently got this information too, at least for Rampage he did. This week, the only information that has made it to reporters is the total viewership, not the demo. Conspicuous. More on that later. So what we have here, reported first by Andrew Zarian of the Matt Men podcast. SmackDown, obviously, we haven't mentioned this yet, but people listening probably already know. SmackDown was on FS1, which is a cable network, instead of its usual broadcast home of Fox, because we had baseball playoffs on Fox. So what we have here is the 2.5 hour fast national rating for SmackDown, 793,000. And what we have for Rampage, 549,000. Now, looking at these numbers, we'll get the final, by the way, on Monday, right? These are just like prelim numbers. These are not the final answer from Nielsen. The difference by percent between fast nationals and finals is roughly 5%. So if we're trying to make an estimate, which is what we're doing right here, trying to make an estimate about what the finals will be that get reported on Monday, let's just add 5% to each of these numbers, and we get this. 833,000 for SmackDown, 576,000 for Rampage would be my rough estimate. I bet that's pretty close to what we're going to read on Monday. Now, it's conspicuous that the demo hasn't been reported yet, while it has been reported in prior weeks. It sounds like at least Raj Geary made some effort to see if he could get the demo rating information. He could not, apparently. He has not reported it yet anyway. I asked someone about what's happening here as far as why we didn't get the demo. I was told by someone who presumably knows what the demo is, that there's a reason why the demo hasn't been reported yet. So anyway, let's go further with our estimate and try to estimate and predict what the final rating is going to be for the demo, that is the viewers between the ages of 18 to 49. And if Gullah will move his head out of the way a little bit. So what I have here in blue is sort of a pro SmackDown case. And what I have here in orange is a pro Rampage case. So to predict what the demo is going to be, I'm looking at what's the usual percentage of viewers relative to the total who are between the ages of 18 to 49. And AEW viewers, there tend to be a higher percentage of viewers in the demo for AEW programs, including Rampage, than there are for WWE programs, including SmackDown. So what does it say here? Hopefully people can read this. We're looking at it a little bit differently. So let's take a pro SmackDown case. Let's assume that the 18 to 49 demo percentage out of the total is 38% for SmackDown and 49% for Rampage. This is based on the last few weeks. Rampage had a really high percentage of viewership in the demo early on, say for the CM Punk episode. I think it was like 60% or something like that. It's quite high. And that has slid down as the weeks have gone on and the total viewership has diminished. So, and that program really seems to be settling into whatever its norm is going to be. But anyway, let's say 49%. It's been, I think it was 45% the week before. That was the lowest it had been yet. And it had been in the high 40s, low 50s in the few weeks before that. So let's say 49% for Rampage, 38% in the demo for SmackDown. What we get then is 316 in the demo, 316,000 in the demo for SmackDown and 282,000 in the demo for Rampage. This is what I'm calling a pro SmackDown case. Everybody's more familiar probably with the demo ratings. The demo ratings for those viewership totals would convert to 0.24 demo rating for SmackDown, 0.22 demo rating for Rampage. I can point to it just like a weatherman. You can point to the Rampage one. Go ahead and point to it. You just obscured it with your head.
Yes. There we go.
All right. So that's pretty close.
Yeah. So we actually have some questions here in the YouTube.
Let me get to the pro Rampage case first.
Okay.
And then we'll go to the questions. And let's take a look at a pro Rampage case where the percentage in the demo for SmackDown is 34%, which is more like what it's been lately on Fox. And it's 52% for Rampage. And then we end up with 283,000 for SmackDown, a 0.22 rating. And we end up with 300,000 for Rampage, a 0.23 rating. In which case, Rampage edges out SmackDown in the demo. So I think these numbers are going to be very close when they're reported on Monday. Yeah, there's questions.
Yeah, well, there's questions. First off, Scott Summers asked, we were actually sat together, or are we kayfabing this? No, we are in the same room.
No, there's a split screen, right, that you can't see. There's a seam, and we've just merged two images together. It's very, yeah.
Corey Jackson asked, do you think the reason the 18 to 49 demo has not been leaked because Rampage beat SmackDown in the demo?
That's possible.
Good guess, probably. Tim B said that Meltzer said he had the top 10 market demos and recited them in today's podcast. So we'll have to.
Here's another tidbit I can tell you is that who do you know who the baseball game was between on Friday night that was on Fox?
I'm assuming it was Braves and Dodgers. It was either Braves, Dodgers, or Astros, Red Sox.
Okay. Well, apparently,
once my team's out, I don't pay attention.
I think it's in New York and Chicago. The SmackDown was still on Fox, I was told. So if you're trying to make a pro WWE argument, you could say, well, even if, let's say we find out on Monday that Rampage edged out SmackDown in the demo, Rampage on TNT, SmackDown on FS1. Even if that's the case, I mean, I don't know who's going to do this. It's not like WWE's going to make a statement about this. But one could spin that, well, if you added up the SmackDown viewership in New York and Chicago, actually SmackDown would come out on top in the demo. That's very plausible. Because what usually happens is if in the recent weeks where there's been preseason football on Fox, where in a handful of markets across the country, SmackDown either wasn't on or was on at a later time. Eventually, when those ratings would be reported on Monday, that all gets aggregated together. It all gets tidied up and fixed. That's not going to happen in this case. What we're going to get on Monday is a report of what SmackDown did on FS1 nationwide. And there's not going to be any report about what SmackDown did on Fox in New York and Chicago. At least not from like Showbiz Daily or from me. I guess maybe I could try to get access to that information. We'll see. So yeah, it'll be very complicated and there'll be lots of plausible deniability, at least in WB's favor. We'll find out on Monday. I'm debating doing, like, should I do a live TV ratings talk on, like, Monday evening instead of Thursday? Because there's no Dynamite rating again.
Your Twitter, too. Your Twitter is going to be very interesting after 4 o'clock on Monday, whatever those results are.
Yeah.
You get a lot of notifications.
It always is. And I tweet, and then I mute the tweet.
Speaking of Monday, people were actually bringing up the, as far as the quarter hours and what that half an hour was. Yeah, we'll find out all Monday. These are just estimations for the whole show.
Quarter hours, as far as will we get that information? Somebody will get that information. Maybe I'll get that information. I have been reporting Rampage quarter hours for weeks consecutively here. W quarter hours are harder to come by, but I've reported Raw quarter hours in the past. So I don't know. We'll see. I will ask.
Tim writes in the chat that they were on secondary Fox stations, WWOR in New York and WPWR in Chicago.
What was on secondary? The baseball game or
yeah, SmackDown? Tim, if you can answer, was it the baseball game or SmackDown?
Okay,
that was on the secondary Fox stations. I would imagine that probably big networks, they could have possibly two Fox stations.
How many people are watching right now?
28 people. 28 people.
That's in thousands, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's what's happening here. I don't want to speculate where the Fast National information is coming from, but I will say it is conspicuous, isn't it, that the demo did not reach reporters this weekend. I thought that maybe we would get a Dynamite Fast National too, but it doesn't sound like that's happening. But I wonder. I don't know if you know where I'm going with this as I put this slide up on the screen, Golo. I wonder if this is the last Friday Night War of the month.
Well, so it would happen again, it looks like, on Friday, October 29th, correct? Yeah, so Friday, October 29th, which is the World Series, which I would imagine that would air in every single Fox market.
And you may not know, but I'm curious, like, why the game was on secondary markets, or SmackDown was on secondary markets, secondary Fox networks. I think I'm not familiar with what that really means, in fact, but yeah, anyway.
I know. I just know that, like, the Yankees and the Cubs and White Sox not being in it, you know, and it's a Yankee rival. If it was ALCS, the Yankee rival, two Yankee rivals actually in there. So I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So yeah. So, I mean, you know, as you have here, preemptions. So yeah, the 29th, I would imagine we will have another war. Will Tony Khan do the same thing he did this time around and give us a Rampage buy-in?
Maybe. I guess, like, the question, what kind of results encourage WWE to do an extra half hour again? What kind of results discourage them from doing a half hour again? Like, if Rampage does edge out SmackDown, enough as one, does that discourage WWE from making that move again and then possibly losing again? Or if they really blow away Rampage in the demo, are they like, all right, that worked, let's do it again? Or is it, I mean, I guess.
I think it's the other way around.
It's the other way around.
I think it's if they blow out Dynamite, they say, Rampage, they say, see what we did, and they'll just be regularly scheduled 8 to 10 on the 29th. If they lose, knowing Vince McMahon, he's like, you're going to have a SmackDown and FS1 that's all of a sudden going to have.
He's not going to back down.
Raw stars on it now. It's going to be a super SmackDown.
I don't know. I guess I brought up the first case first because I think that's more likely, because it's, you're risking a bad story of AEW beat WWE in such and such way. It's a really isolated case, and SmackDown is on FS1 and not Fox, obviously. But I sense that they wouldn't want, if the result is, oh, There's a way to spin the story in which it makes WWE look bad. Why risk doing this again? But I can see what you're saying, though, as far as a company led by someone like Vince McMahon who doesn't want to back down, pal, from a challenge. I don't know.
Tim did answer us. SmackDown was SmackDown around the secondary channels, and in Chicago, it's a very, very small affiliate. So I'm assuming it's much like how For the longest time, my TV Buffalo was a Fox affiliate in Buffalo, New York.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I think it's a something like that. So.
Okay.
But I'm very intrigued to see if we have another 30-minute war. WWE in this whole thing is taking a weird approach. Part of it looks like they're not letting it is fuel them like WCW did. You know, where they don't really address it in press conferences and all that, but then they do little things like running
the
extra 30 minutes and all that. So,
well, the order of power is different. It's if we're referencing 1996, let's say.
Yeah. Where, I've been listening to a lot of stuff on that because it's
have the you?
25th anniversary.
So, of what?
Of the NWO. So okay. I've been listening to a lot of how Vince responded, and they were all very vocal in media and all that. And
well, in 1996, the order of power, at least financial power, was certainly in WCW's favor. And Vince felt attacked, as he often does. and like he was the victim of predatory business practices. Does that sound familiar? Anyway, so you could see how. I mean, I think it's always safer to punch up than to punch down, right? You look bad by being the big guy, which they are now by far. I mean, if we're just talking about revenue difference, it's probably a 10x difference for WWE over AEW. It's probably about $1 billion to $100 million in revenue difference on an annual basis. So, and I think think about it like a wrestling promo. If you want to, you know, we're taught in wrestling to never cut your opponent down because if you beat them, then you beat nobody. And it's a little, they don't want to put over this opponent, right? They want to bury this opponent. Yeah. They don't want this opponent to gain more traction and more momentum. So you don't want to acknowledge that this opponent even matters, right? You want to bury them and dismiss them and minimize their importance as much as possible. So we have Nick Khan saying things like, I don't ever think about competitors. He says to Ariel Helwani in that interview in August, he says, have you ever known me to ever think about what a competitor does? Something very much to that effect. I'm paraphrasing. And they clearly do. I believe they clearly do think about this competitor quite a bit. And they should.
And if you think about where he comes from, sports agencies try to poach people from other agencies all the time. It's constant competition. It doesn't turn off. He's got that in him. He was very successful.
I'm sure Nick Khan never thought about William Morris Endeavor while he was at CAA. I think AEW poses a real risk to WWE in a lot of really fundamental ways. I think that's obvious. I think what's frustrating for fans, maybe I'm projecting, but I think what's frustrating for fans is that this is another example. This being when WWE dismisses or minimizes this notion that AEW is competition. This is another example of fans reacting unhappily, let's say, to that action because it's another example of WWE denying what seems to be to everybody else in the world to be reality, which I don't know. I feel, again, maybe I'm just projecting, but I feel like that's one of the hallmarks of WWE and WWF throughout my lifetime is selective acknowledgement of reality and the world around them.
Yeah. All right.
Not the next slide.
Yeah, let's... Do we want to actually continue on this?
You have more to say about this?
No.
I don't.
All right. So you want to go back to the Gullah report?
Oh, okay.
Yes. All right. So we won't go over the Rampage because we just went over the estimation. I do want to say that if your estimations are correct, it is a very nice increase for Rampage compared to the week before, which was 502,000.
Which was the all-time low.
Yeah.
The record low.
And a 0.17 and 18.49. So that'd be a really nice... Yes. 18 to 49.
This was the 10th episode of Rampage.
Increase for them. Yeah. We'll move on to the...
Just real quick, because I'm noticing on the screen, I don't want to mislead anyone. I've got a 0.30 on the board here for Rampage's P18.49 rating and a 0.22. Disregard that, because that doesn't make any sense. I apologize for that. For that whatever is on the screen for the P18.49 rating. For those two, for SmackDown and Rampage. But go ahead, move on.
All right, so I'll talk more in the... They said that when I'm looking at you, I'm kind of going away from the mic, so I'll talk more in the mic directly. Yes. And just look at you.
See, they're validating my concerns here.
I'm a very eye contact person.
You know what you need? We've already the WrestleNomics finance department has already ordered you a mouse today, because last week we got complaints that you were clicking on your mouse and keyboard throughout the whole show. So you got a mouse. Where's the camera? I bought Golo a mouse. What you need, I think, is a headset.
Oh,
yes, with the mic.
Yes.
Right here. So you can move your head
around. I'm used to those. I wore a lot of those in yes. college.
Yes.
All right.
And, look, like now the mic is like way in front of your face. Nobody can see your face.
Well,
and that's not a monitor you're looking at. You're looking at the YouTube video that's from 20 seconds ago. There you go. There, look at that.
All right.
Oh, that looks okay.
All right. We look good. Do we sound me? All right. So when I won't look at you directly. So want to move on to Raw for the Golo report?
Sure.
Sure. All right.
You probably need
to. So if you want to pull that up for me. Yes. So for Monday Night Raw, we got 1.58 million with a 0.42 in the 18 to 49. That is down, in 1849 wise from a 0.52. But 1.86 million. So, yeah, so quite a decrease for Raw. It wasn't a draft episode and everything. But I don't know if you really kind of saw the results of the draft. They did kind of try to make Raw very star heavy with draft results. Now, it doesn't technically kick in until after Crown Jewel, I guess. But it's interesting to see a decrease after they've kind of stacked the deck here for Monday Night Raw.
Yeah. This was what? This was down. This was, I think, the fourth or the fifth lowest total viewership for Raw in its history. It's a different story for the demo. The demo is not that lowly ranked. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't see a ton to try to unpack here at the risk of hyper analysis. It was what it was. They're going against football. The football competition is complicated and different every week with. And which this goes for Thursday night too, in terms of sometimes it's on network and in addition to cable, sometimes there's the ESPN2 Manning cast, sometimes there's not. Yeah.
They'll be going against the Buffalo Bills, this week too. So
that's true. The Buffalo Bills and the Titans are next week.
Tomorrow.
Or I'm sorry. Next episode tomorrow, of Monday Night Football is the Bills and the Titans. Are the Titans good?
Yeah, they can be. They'll probably squeeze in the playoffs.
They can be.
But they're not a Super Bowl contender.
I hope hope our friend Super Beast isn't listening to you. Despair.
They got the best running back in the league. I'll give them that.
Okay.
All right. So we'll move on to NXT 2.0. I always forget that detail.
That's the designation you need to consider.
632,000 to 0.15. Very similar numbers to the week before. 630,000 to 0.13. So, not a terrible place for NXT to live.
Yeah, I've heard that when you don't say, if you just say NXT and not NXT 2.0, that there's in the headset of the commentators, there is an electric charge that they feel if they say the incorrect terminology. This was an okay rating. I hesitate to get too much into ratings because I've talked about those in some detail on Thursday already. This is a good example of where NXT might be living, especially in a two consecutive weeks where it did very similar numbers, at least in total viewership. I believe the competition was a little bit less difficult for them on this week compared to the prior week too, which may be why they were a little bit higher in the demo.
As you said before, we don't have a Dynamite yet. You'll probably get that Monday.
Let me just interrupt because I see stuff in the chat about the 3-0. Like I mentioned it earlier. I don't know why that's in there. I don't know why that generated in there. Maybe I was playing around with other scenarios. I tried to delete it out of the cell just now, but just sorry about that. Just please disregard the 3-0 there. That's in the Rampage row.
All right. Yeah. So as we said, Dynamite, I'm not really go over that because we don't have numbers. We'll have numbers Monday for the Saturday night Dynamite. And the same thing, there was no Roads to the Top this week. So,
there was, but it was on Saturday night.
Okay.
So Saturday Dynamite and Saturday Roads to the Top. Those ratings will come out Tuesday morning.
Okay. And then, Impact, we do have an Impact here, 89,000 in a P2 with a 0.03 in the 18 to 49 compared to 111,000 the week before with a .02 in 1849. So an increase on 1849, but less than 100,000 viewers for Impact.
I think this is the fourth lowest Impact total viewership ever. There's only a few that have been that low. One of them is, I think there were 69,000 viewers in July when there was the error with the guide.
Yeah,
Guide. Where the guide did not list Impact in a lot of systems. So this is, this is not a good rating for Impact. The demo, though, is up. We're looking at a program with very small viewership, though, so I don't know if these fluctuations in more limited sections of the viewership are as reliable as maybe the total viewership is, but even that is a small audience. In any event, that's measuring lower. I believe this is the fourth lowest Impact total viewership. Well, when I say ever, I mean on Access. It's probably higher than anything on Pursuit, I would bet. We don't know, though.
All right. And then their Thursday competition, Dark Side of the Ring.
They overlap for 1 hour.
Yep. Did 135,000 with a .06 in the 1849. That is slightly down P2 from 137, but up as far as from the 1849 from the .05. That was the Bruiser Bedlam episode 2 weeks ago. This past episode was the Luna Vashon.
Yes. In the grand scheme of things, ratings for Darkseid are lower this season than last season, especially this second half after they've returned from the hiatus. I think this is like the third or fourth lowest viewership for a Darkseid episode.
I wanted to bring this up to you. Do you think it's because the topics are becoming more, for lack of a better word, niche is probably better than what I'd say obscure. Like they're more like, hey, now we're not going away, so we're going to do this FMW episode. We're going to do the Bruiser Bedlam episode. I mean, these are all things I'm interested in. And I love the work they do over at Darkseid. But I wonder if it's just that, that common wrestling fan, it's hard to bring them in. Even though almost every episode has like a Vince McMahon WWE tie-in to it. The steroid trial, I've been saying this on this podcast the last couple weeks.
That's coming up.
That is ending the season.
Is it?
So
interesting.
I really intrigued to see what that's going to be because that's a pretty pro, and they have Jerry McDivitt on it.
Do they really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. That's going
to
be a good one.
I wonder if Jerry McDivitt like defers to WWE about these things or if Jerry McDivitt rides alone.
If I remember.
Because Jerry, to be clear to everybody, I think everybody thinks of Jerry McDivitt as like WWE's lawyer, which is fair enough. Jerry McDivitt isn't, and I don't believe has ever been a W employee. He is a lawyer who they hire from K&L Gates.
If I remember correctly, listening to Evan Husney and Jason Eisner, I think it is on.
Who are the producers?
Yeah, I can't remember which podcast it was, and so I'm not like exactly quoting, but I think they mentioned how they wanted McDivitt. They reached out to him. He said, "Let me see if."
He will do wrestling media.
He sometimes. Goes, let me see if this is something I should do, and then he gave him the okay, I guess. So like really? he probably cleared it. I'm sure he didn't ask permission, but he's probably like, hey, if I did this, what was your thoughts? Because he did the Something Wrestle Live.
With,
like,
keep the microphone close to you.
He did the Something Wrestle Live with Bruce Pritchard before. So
like here,
yeah, here. There we go. Yeah, he did that. So, like, I know he'll pop up once in a while, but.
And I get the sense that, like, they trust him because he's the lawyer and first of all, he's intimately aware of legal proceedings related to whatever he might be talking about. And he knows, like, okay to say and what's not, or what's a good argument and not, or something, something to that effect. But anyway.
Yeah. So, it's so funny. Scott Summers brings up a point about the Dark Side of the Ring. It is immediately available for a catch-up and a demand service. So much, though, that and I'll admit it on this podcast here. I will, at around 9:15, 9:20, put in the Vice TV app and start it from the beginning with no commercials.
You're telling me that there might be alternative ways to watch some of these programs that are not measured in the Gully Report?
Yes, and it pops right up. So just to Scott Summers comment, yes. So it's so on demand that it's up there like 15 minutes into the 9 o'clock hour.
Really?
Yeah.
And there's no commercials.
When I watch it on demand, there isn't. There's like a Vice commercial here and there, but there's not.
You say on demand, how?
So I'll go on the Vice TV app.
Do you? Is this something that you need a cable subscription? No, you don't have cable.
Yeah, you have. Well, I.
You do have cable.
I do have cable. Yes, you have to have a cable login to get the Vice TV app. And okay. Yes.
Okay. So you have to you have to be on a system that is carrying Vice.
Yes.
And Vice is probably being paid by the system. If
yeah, like the Vice TV, you have to have a cable service, whether it's Spectrum, so there's still Verizon,
some sort of economic Cox, incentive. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like the heels stuff that we talked about before. I mean, we are, especially when it comes to programming that is not live, it's not a live program like the in-ring programs are. I don't know if the majority of the viewership is live same day, which are the numbers that we're looking at here, or if the majority of the viewership is what we might call delayed, beyond live same day. And by that, I mean anything from DVR to watching it through some sort of app or streaming, some legitimate stream, hopefully legitimate streaming service.
Well, it is a legitimate. It's the
I know you're referring to legitimate streaming yes. platform, but there are obviously ones that are illegitimate as well. But I think that's a pretty small and perhaps de minimis portion of viewership.
I have my phone out here. So
you're logging into the WrestleHawks Patreon, which listeners, if they're not already, could sign up to for $5 a month to get access to all my weekly TV ratings reports. When I say weekly, I mean every show weekly, and because it's daily that there is a new report up there, and you get access to the WrestleHawks viewership spreadsheet. That's all for $5.
And it's all the archives, too. You can see how something performed 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It's all in there.
If you have a retrospective podcast and you wanted to go back and see someday, there's not a huge archive yet. But yeah.
But monitor, if you're doing like a – if we're going to dig through 2019.
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
No, there's no 2019 there.
2020. Sorry. I'm really trying to put it over.
I know this is a wrestling podcast, but don't false advertise.
I wanted to bring up the reason why I'm on the WrestleNomics Patreon is the numbers you reported as far as the Heels season finale, which could be the series finale. We have got no real news.
That was
this
most recent week?
Yes. Okay. This past Sunday. Okay. It was watched by 81,000 viewers with 18,000, 18 to 49. That's overall up in the P2, but down from the 29,000, 18 to 49.
Now you can like back before. Off the mic because we're getting a lot of plosives.
Okay.
You know what a plosive is?
No. He left.
Plosive is like... I will demonstrate a plosive. You just gotta have to say, Peter Piper picked yes. a pair of pickled peppers. The popping sound, and that's why we have the pop filters in the world to try to minimize plosives.
Right. Well,
yes,
I'll watch this one. But yes, Heels.
Gullah's mic, by the way, is taped to his mic stand today. We had to tape it onto his mic stand because that's actually my fault. I forgot to bring over the appropriate apparatus. But anyway.
So
Heels.
Heels up in the P2, down 18 to 49. We talked about it. Me and you are both guessing not a renewal.
We guess not. But that's only based on live same day. I would imagine the delayed viewership and the non-linear
I can tell you, plays into it. I've seen a lot of advertising for it. Stars puts it out as far as advertising. So
yeah, but the only evidence, the only sort of wide set of evidence, I know you have DVR viewership, but I don't have any context to put that DVR viewership in as far as other Stars programs. But compared to Sunday live same day Stars programs, Heels did not do that well relative to its predecessors in that time slot.
We got a couple of questions regarding ratings. So before we move on, we'll touch those. It looks Umesh Mina, and if I mispronounced your name, I'm sorry. Can you tell how much percentage of each show's viewership comprise of people over 50?
Comprise of, yes, for most of them. What we really need to do is bring out the spreadsheet. Maybe I can do that. Should I dare try to do that right now? I'm gonna try. Okay,
and we got some good internet here at the Gullah House.
You're going to see something really crazy on the screen, just like a self-referenced House of Mirrors. what is this? Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to attempt to open the spreadsheet. Okay, hopefully this works. We're gonna fold. Okay, so what was the question? Oh yeah.
So how are they doing just 50 and up?
Yeah. So where is my I have a pivot table for that that has charts on it. This is the answer. So we don't know. We wouldn't know for SmackDown anyway, because on Fox, we will know actually this week because it'll be on cable. So Showbuzz will report a P50 plus rating. We will know for Rampage, but this is for the most recent episodes for ratings that we do have. Raw, it's 62% 50 and over for Dynamite. Not Saturday, but the prior week's Wednesday, the most recent episode of Dynamite that we do have a rating for, 50% in the demo, for NXT, 65% in the demo. We don't know for Impact because it doesn't finish in the top 50 cable originals on its day. We only get a P2 plus and a P18 and 49, but we can calculate from that what's not in the demo. And you could figure that a small percentage is under the age of 18 and figure that the rest of that is, over the age of 50. So, this is Impact that has a small audience. So less reliable data here, but 57% outside the demo, I would guess mid to low 50% age 50 or higher. Now that probably all these, this information that we're looking at here probably just correlates strongly to the median age of the viewer, which I think you should now be seeing on the screen. Yeah, that looks okay, right? Yeah. Which is here, color coded and so forth, where, you know, there's a distinct difference between this swath of WWE programs that are all having a median age of 50 or older, in the case of NXT on two occasions recently, 60 or older, and AEW Dynamite in the high 40s, low 50s, and Rampage early on as low as 43. That's for the CM Punk episode in the mid 40s and 49 on the 2 weeks ago Rampage, or the last Rampage that we have a final rating for. So there's that.
I wanted to bring up a question that Tim had. It's more of like correlation. He says, would it be fair to say that USA TNT have far more granular ratings data due to their parent companies, Comcast and AT&T, owning Xfinity and DirecTV? So yeah, their parent companies own cable providers. So
more granularity than what? Read the question again. It probably makes sense. I just have
to. So in 2021, would it be fair to say that USA TNT have far more granular ratings data due to their parent companies, Comcast and AT&T, owning Xfinity and DirecTV?
So I don't know for sure. I've never been in a Nielsen database, but I believe definitely TV networks have Nielsen subscriptions, and they have them. I'm sure they can look at the minute by minute ratings. I don't know to what degree they do, but absolutely. I think they can look at the minute by minute ratings of anything they want, because they probably pay Nielsen enough to get access to that information. I'm not intimately aware of how a TV network or in WWE's case, I believe WWE is a Nielsen subscriber. I think, you get access to, I would think, just about whatever information you want as far as final ratings. And that includes granular information like quarter hour data and minute by minute data for sure.
All right. So we can move on here.
Okay.
To the next slide.
What's the next slide?
Let's see here. I'm following along with you here. So we're done with the Gullo report here.
We haven't done this, but we've talked about this in the past, I think. Just pointing out that FS1 has a slightly smaller coverage than TNT. And it's a lower profile network, which is something that people should keep in mind too. I don't know if there's that much more to add. We have Vice on here too, just showing you what the coverage is of Vice and Access TV. Yeah. 55 million. And this is all as of August 2021. I don't know if we've discussed this, but I discussed this on the live TV ratings talk. We have referenced in the past that Vice is in like 60 or 70 million homes. That's probably older information. It's now in 55 million homes. Access is in 40 million homes, which is about half of the cable homes.
Yes. So what I find interesting about that, is it'll be interesting to see if MLW ends up getting a regular, deal, maybe a weekday deal, 10 o'clock or so with Vice TV, because they would be in more homes than Impact, and be interesting to see if they could eventually eclipse the numbers that Impact are doing with that. So
yeah, we will see. I mean, the information that I got showed that MLW didn't exactly outperform what's normally in that slot after Darkseid. But who knows if MLW Fusion was in a normal slot, if they could build up an audience that eventually was bigger than what Impact has, given Access is on a network that's only in about half the homes and Vice is on a network that's in, I don't know, 2/3 of the homes or something like that. So there's that.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. And I just want to let you know about a brand new sponsor we have for the network. It's Eufy. And let me tell you a little bit about their newest product, the Eufy VideoSmart E330. This isn't your everyday smart lock. This is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell offering triple the security and triple the convenience. Instead of loading up your door with a bunch of different devices, you install one and it takes care of everything in a complete package. It's not just about the home security though. The Eufy Video Smart Lock E330 is also for convenience. No more worrying about losing keys. You can let each member of your family get a password. You can monitor their movement in and out of the house. You can keep an eye on your packages. You can check in on your house while you're away. There is so much you can do with this product. Best of all, it is easy to install and set up. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. Leave that drill in the toolbox. The Eufy has keyless entry, a 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, a rechargeable battery with a 4-month lifespan, two-way audio from the lock, enhanced night vision, 24/7 customer support, and you'll love this, none of those pesky monthly fees. Eufy sent me a Smart Lock 330 and I've loved it so far. It allows me peace of mind when I'm at work or when I'm away on one of my patented vacations. Plus, it helps me keep track of deliveries to the house, saves me a trip back to the car if I just need to run in for something and I forgot my keys, and the two-way audio system works well for those unwanted guests at my front door. No, I do not need new siding or windows or a roof. Thank you, though. You can simply tell them you aren't interested from the comfort of your couch. Now, are you ready to ditch the others and join the Eufy revolution? Of course you are. Get started today by searching Eufy Video Lock on your search engine of choice. That's E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can finally, once and for all, gain complete control of your door. Once again, that's E-U-F-Y Video Lock. eufyofficial.com/videolock, and we thank them for sponsoring the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network.
With HelloFresh, you get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. Skip the trips to the grocery store. You can count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it is America's number one meal kit. There's something for everybody to enjoy with recipes designed and tested by professional chefs and nutritional experts to ensure deliciousness and simplicity. And guess what? The fall harvest season is officially on with HelloFresh. Count on seasonal recipes like pumpkin cinnamon rolls, Friendsgiving ready sides, as well as fresh, high quality ingredients that travel from the farm to your front door in less than a week. Are you economical and frugal like me? Well, HelloFresh has you covered. HelloFresh offers the flexibility that you need to easily customize your order on the app within minutes. Easily change your delivery day, your food preferences, and your plan size, or skip a week if you need to. And we're not just talking about food that is good, tastes good, you feel good about eating, but HelloFresh is good for the world too. It's the first carbon neutral meal kit offsetting 100% of carbon emissions. As a result, HelloFresh's carbon footprint is 25% lower than your store-bought grocery-made meals. We're talking about pre-portioned ingredients here, so you're not overbuying and you're not putting a burden on the planet or your wallet. And HelloFresh's packaging is almost entirely recyclable or already recycled content. Eating healthier has never been easier with low-cal, carb-smart, vegetarian, and pescatarian options. And no matter what you choose, every single recipe is packed with fresh produce sourced directly from farmers. So here's what you have to do. Go to HelloFresh.com/VOW14. Use the promo code VOW14 for up to 14 free meals, including free shipping. No cost to you. 14 free meals, free shipping. Because you listen to this podcast, you get those 14 free meals from America's number one meal kit, HelloFresh.
All right, move on to our next slide here.
Boom.
Oh, and I did see this when you sent it to me. I couldn't wait to talk about this. So okay. The head of the table, Roman Reigns, he's going to be on the November 29th Monday Night Raw. And where is that, Brandon? At the UBS Arena in yes. Long Island. As we saw last week, reported by our good friends at WrestleTix, Dynamite was outperforming ticket sales for Raw in the same arena.
Yes.
And by the way, Dynamite is later than that Raw. So this is definitely a move by WWE to go, hey, we're bringing the SmackDown World Champion over to Raw.
The needle mover.
The needle mover is going over to Raw. And I find it interesting because I brought it up before that they keep making this point that the draft is set in stone after Crown Jewel or in large scale international event to some people.
The LIE.
Yes, the LIE. I find it interesting that they're just going to throw that out the window. Hey, we're going to bring SmackDown people over a few weeks after the rosters are set in stone.
Now, to be fair, advertising Roman Reigns for a Raw doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to appear on the television program. He might appear in a dark match.
He could do the dark match, yes.
So this doesn't mean that he's going to be on TV, necessarily. I'm looking for if WrestleTix is updated. More recently than October 12th, they haven't. Today is October 17th. So this is as of 5 days ago. Same building. Raw is on November 29th. Dynamite is on December 8th. Tickets distributed for this event. Dynamite is currently at 7,000. Well, this is, again, as of the 12th. 7,522. Raw currently at 2,800. So this was, I believe, like a couple of hours after this announcement was made. So it may be drastically different for all we know. The needle mover may have moved the needle and could be drastically different. But hopefully we'll get an updated report from WrestleTix sometime soon on that. This is a blank slide where I intended to put a chart. Moving on.
All right.
Oh, this is – we should have just brought this up earlier.
Yeah, I was going to kind of segue to it, but I wasn't sure where it was in the slide-wise. So – we talked about that buy-in, right? The AEW Rampage buy-in that they put on YouTube. Three matches they had too, but the big thing they advertised was Danielson and Suzuki. And it started, you have here approximately 80,000.
John Pollock has here.
John Pollock, yes. About 80,000 viewers, and it ended with 98,400.
That's a global number.
Yeah, when I watched Saturday morning, it was in the like 400s, and I think Sean Ross Sapp said something about 300 something, but I don't know when he was watching it.
I think the reason why this is interesting to me, or one of the reasons, is we're talking about the live viewership here in terms of like how many viewers watched this and maybe weren't watching SmackDown. Remember when we talk about SmackDown and Rampage, their TV ratings, we're talking about US TV ratings, one country. You know, the country with the highest TV rights fees and so forth, but that's one country. This is a global number. It's hard to say what the live viewership might be like, but I think on YouTube generally for wrestling content, and I know WWE's been geo-blocking India or something. I'm not sure how that's all working out to appease Sony. But before then, and as far as I know, AEW is not geo-blocking India. This is on AEW's channel. India makes up a huge amount of the YouTube viewership, maybe as much as 70%. But anyway, WWE has said in its case, in years prior, when it wasn't geo-blocking India, that only 30% of their digital engagement, which one would think includes YouTube, was domestic. So a minority of this might be US, might be actually competing with SmackDown.
And with a minority, my social media timelines were flooded with people having a TV of SmackDown and a laptop of YouTube.
Yeah, I had that was my situation as well. So you could be registering.
You're double dipping.
Your Nielsen. You could be registered as a viewer through Nielsen of SmackDown while you simultaneously have another screen going. I don't see any reason why that couldn't be the case. Nonetheless, it's not as if hundreds of thousands of people were watching. And then we could say, well, you know, maybe a half or a third of those were US, and maybe that did eat into SmackDown's viewership. It looks like this was tens of thousands of Americans, maybe, who are watching here, which would be kind of a negligible amount of SmackDown's FS1 total viewership of like 800,000 or 700,000 to be bearish. So whatever. But I mean, there's other ways to say that, oh, this was in the benefit. This benefited AEW in terms of it made people talk about on social media, talk about AEW more, and maybe drove more thoughts and mind share and engagement and viewership towards Rampage.
It's getting a lot of post-match buzz as far as a lot of people have took to social media to talk about how great this match was. Mm-hmm. And we actually, Scott Summers put in the YouTube chat that it's now at 817,000 viewers, which the interest of, hey, you should catch this match. That's what they're getting. Obviously, that doesn't do anything to the Friday Night War, no. But it continues to build that AEW interest.
Yeah, I mean, 800,000 YouTube views is fine for AEW. You know, I mean, what context do we put that in? You know, what's the typical, what's the comparable? I don't even know what the comparable video would be to hold it against. I guess other buy-in streams, which would be pre-shows for their pay-per-views, maybe would be something to look at. We certainly don't have that data in our hands right now, but it could be easily looked up. And those videos would obviously be way older, and this is way newer. It's really hard to analyze this stuff, but 800,000 is not a small number for them. Probably, you know, I know they've got many that do millions, but.
So a couple points in here. Corey Jackson brings up the Rampage trended over SmackDown on Twitter for most of Friday night. But, you know, yes, Nick Khan, that doesn't matter. And then Halfmaster puts an interest in me. He says for live stream, it should mostly be U.S. He goes very late night or early morning for most of the markets worldwide where they watch AEW. But if you look at it, though, so that would have been at like 9 o'clock at night, it would have been 9 in the morning in like India or around there. I mean, people are up, they're doing things. It's, you know,
you've got the time zones.
I lived in
like, or you lived in India? No,
I went to Indonesia.
So you went to Indonesia?
Yes, I lived the 24-hour
Indonesia
difference.
Is not that close to India.
No, but that's what I'm assuming. It's close. It's probably like 22 hours.
But it has the first. It has the same first three letters.
I'm
so.
Talking about it basically being that at night here, it's morning there. I'm just saying, okay. I've lived a 24-hour difference like from where it is here. Okay. So,
but that's a good point that this would be most convenient for people in U.S. time.
Think about a big market, though. I mean, I'm not sure. It would probably be afternoon time in Japan, and of course. Yeah, the Japanese audience.
Small market.
Still a Japanese audience would want to watch this match.
I suppose. Yeah.
It was 5:30 in India. Okay, see, so, man, yeah.
5:30 a.m.
Yeah.
So, okay, so not so convenient.
So India and Indonesia definitely have a huge difference.
Yeah, they're like on.
Yeah, but like they're not that far. I mean, when I look at a map, I didn't think there was that big of a time difference.
Okay. All right.
I was in a geography bee once.
Yes. I think you should have a map in this room somewhere that we could reference.
I have a little globe in the other room.
Okay. Because they're like, there's India and...
Yeah, there's like Thailand and all that. And then India. Yeah, but I'm thinking maybe, I thought it was a couple hours. Yeah,
but you were there and you were like, oh yeah, India's right over there. Yes. We're here. Anyway. I put this together this week just for fun, I guess. It's also somewhat relevant with the quarterly report coming up on November 4th. This is the board of directors.
Yeah.
Would you like to say there? How many members are there on the, first of all, do you know what a W board of directors is? I think I've explained this to you before. Do you remember?
If I remember, like they don't necessarily like own part of the company or anything like that.
I think they might own shares.
Like shares, but they don't get on because they own a certain percentage of shares. It's, I don't remember the exact thing, but I know I remember we talked about Steve Coonan, how he didn't have any really role in the company. He's just on the board of directors.
Most of the members of the board of directors, with the obvious exceptions of the first five that we'll talk about here, these are not full-time WWE employees. These are not people who work for WWE. These are not major investors of WWE, although it's plausible that a major investor would push for certain members to be on the board. I think they might get a relatively small amount of shares just to align their interests. That makes sense. And I think they might get awarded stock, and I think we have SEC filings to show that, but I'm not intimately remembering what that is.
I mean, if we just look at this, I think, you know, we got Vince McMahon.
Yes.
Nick Conger, Cena Salen, Stephanie McMahon, Paul Levesque, the usual players.
So those are obviously full-time employees, major executives for WWE.
But then we got Frank Riddick on there.
Remember good old Frank Riddick?
Yeah.
Were you around for the Frank Riddick days?
I was not around for the Frank Riddick days. Not involved in the WrestleNomics realm of things.
Yes. Frank Riddick was the CFO after Berrios was fired. And he was the CFO until Christina Salen and Nick Khan were hired. So he was, I mean, that's a period of roughly January to August of 2020. So he was, you know, he appeared on a number of conference calls.
We have Jeffrey Speed, who was actually a former Six Flags EVP and CFO.
And I should note, too, when we're talking about Frank Riddick, Frank Riddick was already somebody who was on the board. So he was plucked off of he was still on the board, but he's somebody who was like sort of drafted from the board to become this interim executive. He is, his past is he's the former CEO of Shale Inland. I don't know what that is off the top of my head, but he's somebody who's, I think you think of these people as being like sort of in advisory roles. I don't know how often they meet. And they have a number of duties as far as determining the compensation of executives. These are people, by the way, how many are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 12, 13, 14. It's 14 of these people. They're supposed to be the ones who are looking out for shareholders' interests and they're the people who are overseeing the executives, you know, ideally to make sure the executives are making good decisions that are in shareholders' interests and are not just running amok or whatever, which is to a degree, a legitimate concern for publicly traded companies in general. And I'm not trying to overhype anything, but especially companies that have Class B shareholders like this one.
It seems to be, to a lot of these board directors, their jobs would be something kind of related to what a sports entertainment market would
absolutely
be. Like you talk about Jeffrey Speed, Six Flags EVP and CFO. I mean, there's the entertainment, you know, live entertainment. We got Lauren Ung, former Travel Channel president.
Yes.
Cable network.
Yep.
We have Steve Pannon, who was former Parkwood Entertainment.
Do you know Parkwood Entertainment is?
I don't know Parkwood Entertainment, though.
Parkwood Entertainment. And I didn't know he was former. I think he was not former when he was. He's a relatively new member of the board of directors. Steve Payman is. Steve Payman is now apparently the former Parkwood Entertainment president and CEO. Parkwood Entertainment is Beyonce's entertainment production company.
So large scale entertainment events.
I heard that Beyonce was putting over Naomi recently or something.
Yeah.
So someone told me
it's her daughter's favorite wrestler.
There you go.
Erica Nardini, Barstool Sports CEO, which is a huge thing to have there. Barstool Sports is pretty much
taking over sports media. She's relatively new to the board. When I tweeted this, someone pointed out to me, people are, I'm not that familiar with Barstool Sports. I understand there've been some controversies. I couldn't describe to you what they are, but
yeah,
people were laughing at the fact that Tony Khan apparently appeared on two Barstool Sports shows recently and like put over AEW and probably disparaged WWE or something.
Yeah. I mean, it's
a media sports.
And I always look at the wrestling podcast, and they started a wrestling podcast and it was like number one in the rankings a week later. Like just a guy. It wasn't like a name on it. It was just a guy from Barstool Sports. Boom. They were top in the rankings.
What is the name of that? Or is that the Robbie?
I think so. Yeah. I don't know where to put my phone, but
anyway,
off some of it. But moving on, Alan Wexler, General Motors, Senior Vice President, Innovation and Growth. We have Manjeet Singh, who is a former Sony Pictures President of Home Entertainment. Mm-hmm. You know, this is now that they've, you know, kind of merged WWE Studios in with their other media division, they still have an advisor. So if they want to get in the movie business.
They are in the movie business. They license content to movie studios. Yes, they don't produce their own films anymore because that's expensive and fails. But they do license their content to The Rock.
Never see a Marine ever again.
I don't. How old is the most recent Marine film?
Probably a few years. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason why you couldn't license that IP to someone who wanted to get The Miz out there again.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. The Miz. We. I think we'll talk about The Miz. More about The Miz. In a moment.
Phones are flying everywhere. Steve Coonan, who we've talked about before in this podcast, Atlanta Hawks and State Farm Arena CEO, which that's also the home of that WWE Day One event.
That's true. Yeah.
That'll be happening. And then Connor Schell, it was Sherman Entertainment CEO. Do you have any info on Sherman Entertainment?
I think, well, so Coonan and Schell are the newest members of the board. Schell, I believe, was very much involved with the ESPN 30 for 30 series, is his big claim to fame. So there's that.
So we just had a just a question here. Well, first off, Scott Summers asked where Berrios and the other lady was. We talked about it during.
Excuse me. We say people's names here.
That's what okay. That's
Michelle Wilson is who you're referring to.
He asked that. Yes. Okay. I'm reading the question for the people on YouTube. See,
you know who that other lady is.
I do, okay. But I'm reading the question word for word from the people. But yeah, the bowling company. Yes.
Bolero.
Bolero, yes.
What about Bolero?
That's where they are right now.
That's where Bolero. So there's more we can tell you about this. So George Berrios and Michelle Wilson, the former co-presidents of WWE, when they left WWE in January 2020. They formed after a long hiatus through the pandemic of I don't know what they were doing. They started their own shell company, or I'm sorry, maybe the more appropriate term is their own SPAC, their own. Do you remember what SPAC stands for? I don't know. Something like special acquisition company is something roughly what it stands for. It's basically, what is a SPAC? This is my understanding. Someone in the finance world could probably explain it better. It's basically an empty company. It says, we're a corporation. We don't do anything yet, but we're going to acquire somebody else's organization and sort of bring them in and then immediately make them public. And this is something that's been all the rage on the stock market in the last year or so. So they started Isos Capital, that is their SPAC, and then they acquired Bolero, which is this bowling franchise. That's what they're doing. They either have or they're very early in going public as that company, basically. But their parent company, I guess, is ISIL Capital. But anyway, yes.
Corey Jackson just asked a question. Are the pitchers ranked to how many shares of stock they have or how important the role of the company?
I tried to make them. There's no rhyme or reason to the size.
I think it's like the most.
Other than I made Vince the biggest because he's the chairman and the CEO and the head of creative. And then I listed the full-time employees first. And then I think I try to roughly put these in order of like who's the newest and who's the longest running members of the board, but there's no rhyme or reason that much to it.
All right, we can move on to our next slide here. And yeah, you just brought it up. The USA Network has renewed Miz and Mrs.
Yes.
For season 3.
Yes.
It did. We were looking at the ratings. It did great ratings.
Here I've got a quick dot chart of the, this is the P2 plus of, I'm guessing the, I get to point, I get to live my dream now. I get to point at the chart. I'm guessing this is season one. This won't be great for people listening on audio. This is season one. And then in the middle, I'm guessing this is season two and then a hiatus and then season two continued. And then if you move your head, Gullo, you can point to what the remaining dots are that would be season three with a hiatus in the middle.
So yeah, the split season, you know how they do a mid season finale and all that. So that's the mid season.
So the viewership for season three is obviously not as high as it was. It was well over 1 million for the entirety of season one, which was apparently only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 episodes, I think. And then season two was, some of them were over 1 million, some of them under, some of them well under. And then the latter part of season two, these might have had different time slots too. I don't think these were all getting the lead in from Raw. But the latter part of season two did well under 500,000. The big takeaway though is that season three did better than season two. And again, I'm not sure what the relationship is there as far as when they had the lead in and when they didn't. But viewership was pretty good for season three. I've closed the slides now and I'm going to reopen them. So does this press release say, what does this press release say?
So renewed for season, so you were talking about the bottom half of season two. They got renewed for a third season.
They're
renewing them for a third season. So you were saying season three did well.
Oh, my
season
bad.
Season two
Thank
did
you.
Well. Yes.
Thank you. So maybe the split is between the seasons is like right here with season one and season two. I don't know. Anyway, yes. I would like you to, did they announce that during an appearance on the Ellen DeGeneres show?
Yeah, on the Ellen DeGeneres show. Plus, Miz has been on Dancing with the Stars.
That's right.
Dressing in multiple different outfits. He was a genie, I saw. So,
does Ellen DeGeneres still host the Ellen DeGeneres show?
Yes, but it's ending, like, at the end of the season. It's done. Oh, okay. Like, I can't remember the exact end date, but yes, she was embroiled in controversy of being a not a great boss. Hmm.
Okay. So, I would like you to read the quote here in this paragraph.
Yeah. So we are overjoyed that we are able to continue giving fans a front row seat into our crazy lives, said Ms. Maurice. Season three is going to be awesome.
they both are attributed with this quote. I love these press release quotes as if they were on the phone.
They said it at the same time.
And they think alike. They're on the same page, and they just had the exact same thought verbatim. And they looked at each other and just said it in unison together at the same time. And that is their quote. It's definitely not the case that a PR person just thought up a quote and then got their approval for it. You know,
it's a very quick, positive tidbit for an article.
Wonderful. Season three is, and awesome is in all caps, by the way.
Yeah.
Just so you know. But I think that's our other than the ratings there, which we've already talked about. I don't know if this is up to date. And we could talk about attendance here. But yeah, that one's definitely a mess. So yeah, I think that's all for. Are there more questions? We're now at 111. But if there are more questions, we'll take that.
Just kind of like what we were talking about, but nothing. Nothing big question wise.
If you have questions, get them in now.
Did you see the Tony Khan quote about, you know, I don't know Ted Turner, never met him. He seemed like a smart guy.
When I read that, I thought Ted Turner was dead.
No.
Best wishes to Ted Turner. He was having health problems right now.
Yeah, he is. He is. He made the point that, like, he knows more about wrestling than Ted Turner. Yeah, because Ted Turner he wasn't the wrestling expert at all.
Well, the talking point that I hear all the time that I think is true is that Vince is, like, obsessed with Ted Turner. And still kind of is.
We saw it in the conference call.
Exactly. Like, he still thinks about Ted Turner. But Ted Turner never really thought about Vince McMahon that much. And Ted Turner was never making day-to-day decisions about WCW. He was just funding it and delegating that responsibility of running it to other people, including Eric Bischoff and Bill Watts and Jim Herd and Kip Fry.
Bill Bush.
And Bill Bush.
Yep.
Maybe Jamie Kellner. He obviously, I don't know. I forget the whole
song. Yeah, I mean, Jamie Kellner was the one that ended it. So, yes.
Anyway.
But yeah, so, we do have a question here from Chicken Pom Pom. Interesting name. Do you feel that we'll ever be able to know the subscriber numbers for AEW Plus on Fight, since its considerable amount of U.S. hardcore viewers are now using that? And somebody brought up the fact, too, that the buy-in was also on Fight.
So. Oh, was it? No, I don't think we'll ever know how many subscribers there are for AEW Plus. AEW is a private company. I foresee AEW being a private company for the foreseeable future, which is something that is questioned to me sometimes. Is, you know, someone was wondering if the fact that Tony Khan did a video for Forbes recently. I don't know if you saw that. This is more recent than the article about him and AEW and Forbes. And in this led to someone, who has also worked with Forbes, to ask me if this meant that AEW was looking at raising funding, was looking for investors basically to get more cash and to, you know, to invest that cash in things they wanted to do to grow the company. No, that's not happening. Tony Khan's dad is Shad Khan. Who's a billionaire. I'm curious why Tony Khan is often referred to as a billionaire in media that I see, because I don't know if Tony Khan's a billionaire. He's the heir to a billionaire.
Yeah. He's also referred to as an NFL owner sometimes, but he's technically not the owner. He's like head of analytics or whatever his position is. I mean, but he's pretty much, it's his football team too.
Yes. But yeah, I don't think we'll ever get that information unless there's some reason why AEW wants that information to be public, because they think it's advantageous to them for it to be public.
I'm not sure who put this up. I want to say it was Meltzer, but I could be wrong. Was reporting that Fox could be paying attention very closely to AEW's performance based on like when their contract goes up with WWE, they may be looking towards. Because if you look at how much 18 to 49 per hour or something like that, it might be much more financially reasonable and smart to go with AEW over WWE.
This is playing with the notion that AEW would end up on Fox.
Yes.
I don't know. What's Sean Ross Sapp had a report about WWE's relationship with Fox. The main takeaway I got from it is that there was a SmackDown. There was a Raw scheduled in LA. It's now a SmackDown scheduled in LA. There have been rumors that there's been tension between those two sides. I don't know. Obviously, that's a much younger relationship than the NBC relationship. So NBCU is deeply involved with WWE at this point, right? There's Raw. There's Peacock, the network content. There's NXT in that order in terms of value. There's Miz and Mrs., which we just talked about, which is on a USA Network. There's no more Total Bellas, Total Divas on E!, which is also NBC Universal, but there's still that reality program there. So there's a deeply rooted relationship with NBCU. So I don't see WWE, you're breathing right on the mic. I don't see WWE leaving NBC Universal in this next round. So the more likely of the two would be Fox. That's something we can say. I think it would take a lot for AEW to not have its two flagship programs on Turner Networks. That said, I don't think it's unreasonable for that to be the end result. For them to put one of them outside of the Turner Network, outside the Turner universe, or the Warner Media universe, or Discovery universe, when those two companies merge. But if Fox would have to make it very much worth it to them. I mean, Fox has something inherently that's valuable, and that's their reach. They're a broadcast network that's in over 100 million homes, well beyond the reach of TNT or TBS. So there's that benefit, and there'd have to be a lot of money involved as well. But yeah, who knows?
All right, we do have some further questions that were asked here. Umesh Mina asks, how much money should AEW be getting in their next TV deal? Can they go to a network like ABC or more, maybe even Fox? We kind of talked about they could do that. But yeah, how much money do you think, just a rough estimate of what they would get, obviously be more than what they're getting now.
It depends. I mean, maybe it's in their interest to try to split it. I think that's, I feel like I don't know a lot to say a lot with confidence, but maybe one of the lessons of 2018, thanks to Nick Khan, is that you make a lot more money if you split the rights. If you make a lot more money if you sell Raw here and SmackDown there, rather than if you sell Raw and SmackDown to the same buyer. You make more money that way. WWE did. They're richer today because Nick Khan helped them split the rights from just NBCU to NBCU and Fox. Maybe that's a strategy that AEW will follow. What will AEW get? Right now, they're getting about $44 million per year for their U.S. rights. I think there's a number of things that factor into what is your media rights value going to be. Viewership is one, and I think there's things to read within viewership, including where your viewership is ranking. Probably 1849 being the most important part of that. Where do you rank? We know Dynamite is ranking number one often in the cable originals on Wednesday. Rampage sometimes is one, sometimes, you know, in the top five or so. But I think they're just based on their viewership. So there's other things too, like your synergies when you see Cody Rhodes appearing on these other Turner shows, when you see Miz appearing on other NBCU shows. Your ad rates are a big deal, of course. I don't know what anybody's ad rates are, but that's a factor, right? And that's something that we've kind of talked about. I talked about on Thursday in terms of, hey, look, NHL wasn't able to equal what Dynamite did in the same time slot, but I bet NHL is driving more value for Turner in terms of ad rates and perhaps in terms of carriage fees. But anyway, I think AEW is possibly going to get just based on its viewership, other factors notwithstanding, maybe a 4x increase in TV rights fees. That would get them to $176 million per year. That's still substantially lower than what SmackDown or Raw get currently, which is 205 in the case of SmackDown, 265 in the case of Raw. But it gets closer.
Your Nick Khan quote pretty much answers Scott Summers' question of, does SmackDown go to USA? Nick Khan would probably look for another outlet if Fox didn't want in. And I mean, he's talked maybe
who's left on the table
here? Maybe it's on Amazon.
That's definitely what they want. Yeah, that's definitely what they want to hype, is that the fangs are the Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google world is interested in us. So if you're not going to bid aggressively, there might be others who are extremely wealthy. The fangs are the biggest companies in the world. Yeah. So perhaps as far as traditional outlets, Viacom is really the only one that's vacant. And I know they just announced that they're doing something with the Wild Women of Wrestling. But that's in syndication deal. And I don't know that would be prohibitive. So,
Andrew Barker, kind of put a comment now that, what does WWE do now that Triple H will clearly not be running the show when Vince steps down? We kind of talked about it. Like, Vince isn't going to step down, in your opinion. And never. I think he doesn't step down either, sells or he dies.
But Vince, as John Moxley said, will die in the chair. Yeah. The most important thing, and I was validated when I was on Sean Walton's show, and he was like, I agree with that when I said, money is really important to Vince. But what's more important is control. He will never give up control. He will, as long as he has his faculties and he is able to work, he will be the head of creative forever.
All right, here. Timby, how have the cable network rankings changed since the SmackDown to Fox and AEW debut? Used to be above TNT, is that still the case?
We're talking about the networks themselves.
Yeah, like I don't know. Cable. Yeah, I'm not sure.
These are questions that require a spreadsheet to answer. These are, so I might be able to at least give you some background information on that on a Thursday TV ratings talk where I have the spreadsheet up and we can actually look at some tabs that might be relevant to that. So please ask me that question again on a Thursday live TV ratings talk.
Immortal Vegan asks, great name, by the way, what's the difference between syndication and cable? Well, syndication can be syndicated on cable. It could also be syndicated on like regular broadcast networks.
Is this a sort of a uniquely US thing?
Like syndication? I'm not sure. Like, I know obviously syndication was the backbone of professional wrestling in the 80s.
This dining room chair is kicking my ass. Golo, you're sitting in your front row seat to
Fastlane.
WWE Fastlane 2016 in Cleveland.
I have a awesome office chair that I'll be putting together once this is all
that you've been withholding done. From me.
Yes. Well, it's in a box. But yeah, I mean, the syndication thing, technically Ring of Honor is in syndication in the aspect of they're broadcasting different time slots in around networks owned by Sinclair. And it's going to be the same thing with WoW. WoW is going to be in syndication. And actually, I think Lavi Margolin, I think, is the one that pointed out that like WoW is going to be in more households than Ring of Honor with the syndication deal.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. Okay.
What's the cost of renting out an arena?
Final question.
What's the cost of renting out an arena? Any examples? Honestly, that's a very broad question. It all depends on the arena. WWE will tell you every time they rent Madison Square Garden, they'll lose money no matter what. Yeah. So it all depends. Obviously, bigger arenas are going to be more costs.
And the main expense, I often see people ask a similar question, and the biggest expense in running a live event that is going to be on TV is the production. It's not just, yes, there's an expense related to getting the rights to use the building, but I believe in all cases at this point, at least in the case of WWE and AEW, that the larger expense is the production cost.
And
hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Was it WWE recently that was running the St. Louis Dome, or they just announced that they'll have something next?
They're doing a pay-per-view. Yes. After AEW canceled their pay-per-view.
That St. Louis thing, we talked about it. There is no football team. They do rodeo, but it's a pretty vacant arena. Maybe they got a deal. Maybe they don't.
Okay. Plugs.
plugs. Check me, Chris Gullo, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, as well as RTA Pod on Instagram. RTA Pod on Twitter, Rediscovering Indies on Facebook and Instagram. We'll be rolling out our part three and our final edition probably around next week or so. We just got to get our schedules aligned. My co-host has been doing a lot of GoPro work. Yeah.
So. Your co-host is like the Kevin Dunn of
the Yes, he's it's hard to get him in a room for a few hours. So
we're referring to Jonathan Ash. Great subscriber and listener to the program.
He was just at Northeast Wrestling last night doing production. So it's hard to pin him down, but we will get an episode out this month. And we're going to finish our deep dive with the NWA 2017. I do recommend that you go on Rediscovering the Indies Archives and listen to the XPW episode before this Dark Side of the Ring.
This is his big moment for XPW.
Because, yes, like I said it before, yes. Jason Iser, Evan Hussey do an awesome job. That's 44 minutes long. We did like 8 hours.
If you can't get enough XPW.
Of deep dive in XPW. And there are some crazy stories. Mm-hmm. But my favorite is that, you know, to throw it in the face of XPW, Messiah went to thumb Nick Gage with the hand that he doesn't have a thumb, and Nick Gage didn't sell it because he doesn't have a thumb. Tried to do the thumb in the eye spot, but he doesn't have a thumb because his thumb got cut off by the people that allegedly were hired by Rob Black. But it was never been proven. That's alleged.
That's about as much as that as I need to know. Somebody tried to thumb. I don't know. Okay. I am doing every Thursday a live TV ratings talk on YouTube. The audio is for patrons as well. The YouTube stream, though, is free for everyone. Stand by for maybe I'll do one Monday night or Tuesday night, because Tuesday morning we'll have the Dynamite rating. Monday evening we'll have the Rampage and SmackDown final ratings. I'm very indecisive. We'll see what happens. There's the Patreon, which we mentioned earlier, patreon.com/WrestleNovice. You get my TV ratings reports almost every day. You get access to the big spreadsheet. You get other reports and other content as well. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Thurston and on Twitter at WrestleNomics. I'm Brandon Thurston.
I'm Chris Gullo.
He's Chris Gullo. And we'll talk to you next time. Bye.